Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, the International Home and Houseware Show just came through Chicago. The annual convention that introduces the latest in home technology brought in over 60,000 people from 100 different countries. No doubt most of them are there to see the latest in smart technology for your kitchen, but many come for more than the tech. They come for the color. The keynote at the conference delivered by Leatrice Eisman. Eisman is the executive director of the Pantone Color Institute. If you're unfamiliar with the Pantone Color Institute, it's probably a good bet that you're not in the fashion or design world. The Institute is the foremost when it comes to color trends, leaning on an international team led by Eisman to not only make us aware of the color trends today, but to predict the color choices for tomorrow. It's science, design, psychology, and fashion all rolled into one. Eisman has written several books on color and continues to be one of the leading voices in the industry and has dedicated her life to understanding what color means, not only to the fashion industry, but what it means to us. Why blue makes us feel a certain way, how we imagine the color red, and why ultraviolet, the color of 2018, lights the way to what is yet to come. It's really amazing to have Leatrice Eisman from the Pantone Color Institute in studio tonight as my guest at the big table. Ms. Eisman, thanks for being here. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
This is great. I've known your work from afar, and I haven't had a chance to get so up close and personal the last couple of days. I'm just blown away by what the science, the design, everything, the psychology, the physiology that goes into color. It's just amazing. Ultraviolet, the color for 2018, how did you land on ultraviolet?
Well, you know, it does take a lot of research, a lot of study. And we do listen to what people around us are telling us, not only designers, but also people on the street, so to speak. What is it they're looking for in a color? What symbology needs to be present there? So we take that into account. And purple is such an interesting color family because there are so many perspectives attached to the color. First of all, it is a combination of red and blue. Mm-hmm. So you have what seems to be diametrically opposed,
right.
The excitement and dynamism of red and the calm and serenity of blue, and yet you put them together, and out of that you get purple. So there's a complexity that is present in the color to begin with. And it's that complexity that makes it an interesting color to many designers because they love delving into the color and showing all aspects of it. To the average person, it might mean a little bit more of a challenge because of its complexity. And yet, if you think of it in the perspective of the world around us, we are living in a complex world in a complex time. So why not have a color that helps to represent that this is not just a, you know, a bright, primary, kiddish kind of a color, but it's something that has more depth.
So at the Color Institute, you're really thinking about not only how the trend will work when it comes to fashion and design, but how it reflects how we're living our lives politically, socially, culturally, everything in 2018.
Right, exactly. So it goes beyond just a, you know, a fluff. Oh, let's throw a dart at the wall, and whatever Pantone chip it lands on, that's the color of the year. You know, it just doesn't fly that way.
When I try to wrap my head around this, when you say you're going to pick the color of the year, I always assume that means that you're falling almost on trend or in line with where designers are taking a color. So you're like, oh, everybody's using ultraviolet, so I'll use it. But really with the Pantone Color Institute, you're setting the agenda. You're before that. Explain that to me.
Well, you mentioned my team, and it's true that we have a great team that travels the world, and we observe what's happening in other countries, not only here in the U.S. We sort of use our peripheral vision, I think, more than most people would. If you're walking the streets of Milan and you're starting to pick up, oh, the use of purple in a particular area, somebody else is using purple in another way, you know, across different design industries, not just in the fashion industry. It's really hard to explain unless you actually are a color forecaster. It's just sort of almost like osmosis. Mm. You pick things up, you're more observant, you're kind of super observant. So you're right. You're predicting because of the fact that you're seeing so much of it around. How is it being used? And I think in today's market, more importantly, what is it being used with?
Really?
That's a really, really important question because we're less of a throwaway society today. If people, you know, buy new plates for the tabletop, next year they're not going to look at it and say, oh, that's so yesterday.
Right.
You know, they want to hold on to it. Now what can they do creatively with those gray dishes. And I use that as an example because it's such a neutral. And we know we can do a lot of different things with gray. But if a forecaster says, you know what, try some yellow. The yellow with the gray is really interesting. Your reaction to that might be yellow and gray. Oh, I hadn't thought about that. So what we like to do is start a conversation right. about color. That's really our main job.
And you find a way to, once the color is chosen, it's a, in the last couple of years it's been announced in the New York Times, and at that point it seems like the design industry, and like you said, it's not just fashion design, it just goes into motion. And in a couple months, maybe even now, you're going to start seeing purples everywhere, and you don't even know it. I go into my local store, you know, to buy a polo for the summer, and I'm like, well, look, they chose purple. And I just think that that's maybe just by accident. It's not. All this stuff is aligned. It blows my mind.
But, you know, there's also another thing that happens. We can't take total credit for this. I mean, when you have a team traveling the world for a big, whatever the company happens to be, I don't want to mention any names in
sure.
particular, but they send their teams as well to the same shows that we go to.
Okay.
And a lot of their people are very tuned in, and they start to see some of the same things that we're seeing, and maybe they'll push the envelope and start to use something that they see going in a particular direction. I think the ability that we have at the Pantone Color Institute is that we can hone in more quickly. With companies, they have to have time
right,
to sort of
right.
set it in motion and get it going. But I do think there's the other side of it, and that is the people who come to the houseware show, for example. Some of them are mom and pops. They're not necessarily big companies. And what they then do is to hear what the trends are, and they say, wow, that's something we need to be thinking about. So it can happen
right.
from both sides of the fence. It's starting to happen. Some companies are already there, but then they need that extra validation from the Pantone Color Institute. See, we were right.
I have so many questions about being on trend, but, you know, as designers and innovators or anyone who wants to jump into a color scheme and they say yellow is, I have a gut feeling about yellow. If they're off, meaning customers don't necessarily, they're not vibing on yellow this year, or that's millions and millions of dollars. So in a way, you do lead the industry because they want to make sure, not unlike Hollywood or other places, when one thing works, then we go with it. There is something about that you're setting the trends for color.
Well, I think there's something to that. And at Pantone Color Institute, it's sort of like the good housekeeping seal of approval, so
right,
to speak.
Right, right.
You know, if Pantone says this is the color of the year, well, maybe we have to pay attention. And again, we respect the fact that people might have a personal reaction. I mean, you could have had a childhood association with yellow that was not very pleasant. And no matter what anybody says, you hear the word yellow and you get goosebumps. It's not a good reaction. And we know that's going to happen. That's a very human element of color.
Right.
But if you're thinking in terms of the marketplace, then it's a whole different story. You're churning around public opinion because they're starting to view things perhaps they hadn't viewed before. You're making suggestions of how to use a color, opening them up to the use of a color that perhaps they had an unpleasant association with.
Well, let's talk more about that. It's amazing to think about the science of what each color means and the psychology, but also the physical. There's so much that goes into this. I've been reading all day today about different color schemes I had no concept about, and a lot of that has to do with my guest tonight, Leatrice Eisman. She is the executive director of the Pantone Color Institute. Her latest book, she's written several books, is called The Complete Color Harmony, the Pantone Edition. She was just in town for the International Home and Houseware Show here in Chicago. Take a quick break. We'll come back more with Leatrice Eisman at the big table. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download Here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio tonight, Leatrice Eisman. She is the executive director of the Pantone Color Institute and also the author of The Complete Color Harmony, Pantone Edition. She was just in town to be the keynote at the International Home and Houseware Show at McCormick Place in Chicago. You know, before we were talking about, you know, all the things you can do with color, and I am just blown away by your team and others in this area that don't just think of color as what color the fabric's going to be in the dress that's on the runway, but really about what the color symbolizes, what it means. I mean, you mentioned about ultraviolet, and I said in the lead, it lights the way to what is yet to come. Talk about how you started this and the science behind understanding what each color means.
Well, from a personal standpoint, I've studied psychology and design. And so it's an easy step from one to the other. But I was in the field of color first from the retail and fashion perspective. And then I realized when I got involved in it that there is this psychology involved. And fortunately, I was able to take a program at UCLA where the woman who headed the program allowed me to do my own practicum on color. She gave me her total blessing. And it was wonderful because I could interview many people. I got so much perspective. Of course, there are loads of books on the subject. Mm-hmm. But in the end, it's really going out there and talking to people and figuring out why they respond to the colors that they do. And I do know that no matter where I travel in the world, there are many truisms about color. I mean, if you show people a Pantone sample of blue, a sky blue, you will get mostly the same positive reaction because people respond to color in a very natural sense. Blue for most people, a sky blue
sky,
means
right,
the sky.
Right.
And we're all hoping
and
for that beautiful
and
blue
sky. And you see that over different cultures, different people, different places around the world. They all have a favorable look at the sky blue, the color sky blue.
Right. There is that perspective. And then, of course, on top of that, from a personal perspective, I'm looking at you, and you do have blue eyes. And I will bet you when you were a little boy and your mother walked you down the street and you had on a blue pullover or whatever, they'd stop and say, look at him in that blue sweater. Look at those beautiful blue
eyes.
That's
interesting. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And so you have warm fuzzies that build up around that color as well. So there's that universal, geographical, natural perspective, if you will, but there's also a personal take on it.
One thing that blows my mind, and I think a lot of people listening, is that, you know, we'll talk and be simple in the sense we're talking about the color blue or the color purple or the color red, but the Pantone Color Institute has proven there are hundreds of reds, hundreds of blues. There may be a family of blues, but there's not one blue. This science has moved forward at such an accelerated pace in the way that now there's hundreds more types of blue than there ever were before. Why is that? Is it technology? What is it about the fact that now we are seeing so much more color and variations on color than we ever have before?
I don't think there's any doubt that there's more variation built on technology. Just the other day, I was reading something about a new blue light that's being developed that you can shoot on food, and it will knock all the pathogens out of food. Now, this is not just pie in the sky. This is research that's being done around it.
Wow.
Now, think of the ramifications of that. Now, we don't know yet what shade of blue they're using, but that's certainly a blue that we would look at very closely at the Pantone Color Institute to decide if, in fact, we have a blue that's close to that, or maybe we need to develop a new blue that's celebrating this new color that's brought about by technology. And even from a historical perspective, William Henry Perkin was the young man who discovered in a laboratory when he was developing some dye for something that when it spilled, it broke, it turned into this amazing shade of purple. And until that time, it was very, very expensive to produce anything purple. It had to come from some very expensive purple dye stuff. Years and years and years ago, it was made from the mollusks, from tiny little snails. And in going back to what was Phoenicia, they found tiny little snails in these little hills with the purple dye on them.
Okay.
So only the wealthy could afford to have, you know, very labor-intensive, somebody going in with tiny little hammers beating these little snails up to get the purple dye out.
Right.
And in the late 1800s, William Henry Perkin discovers what they called mauvine. So it was then available to the masses. Again, another form of technology.
That's amazing. And you really think about it, too. A lot of colors today, technology means chemical. Or it means that you're able to there's no more cracking the mollusk to see what color might come out. We've now created a whole world in science labs where you don't necessarily get these colors out in nature.
Yes, that's true. But on the other hand, I think there is an attempt today. For example, I was talking in the keynote about purple and purple food, how now science has discovered that purple food is really very good for you because of the components in the purple. And that doesn't necessarily come from a chemical source. That could very well come from a natural source, which obviously,
right.
If you're eating a vegetable, and as long as it hasn't been pumped up with chemicals,
right.
It's good for you. It's good for you to eat. Therefore, purple is a great color to have in your you're, you know, even if you were to translate that to a tie, it then becomes known as a less complex color and one that you want to choose because it's really good for you.
We talked about the psychology because you can get into the warm fuzzies or people having traumatic experiences with color. But the physical side of this as well, people have different reactions, physical reactions to the color. Talk about that, because that's something right now I feel like we would only think that it would have a mental component, but you've been able to see that it actually plays out in the physical realm as well.
Yes, it does, physiologically. And the best example I can give, and those people who blush easily will know exactly what I'm talking about. You know, even when you're a small kid, the object of your affection, you know, in the third grade, a boy you've had a crush on, he walks into the room and your cheeks flush and you turn a little more pink or rose. You have no control over that reaction to it. So there is that physiological reaction.
Yeah, right.
And as a matter of fact, the whole idea of red as lipstick came about because ages ago it was recognized that there was a flush to the cheeks when you had an attraction to another person. And so if we take that flush and we develop it into a blush for the cheeks or a lipstick, that becomes more of a signal, a more overt signal, I'm interested in you.
Wow.
So you see how the progression can happen, where a little bit of marketing and some PR and promotion, you can turn that into something that makes money.
Well, it goes back to the idea that marketing plays a big role in color. And obviously, what you guys do with the Pantone Color Institute, that is, that, you know, marketing is going to play out around ultraviolet, which we find out here in 2018. But to think about lipstick, to think about other things that we have just in our society now is part and parcel, or something that's almost human nature, and to think that the color that is associated to that was at one point or another put there for a purpose, or because it elicited some sort of mental or physical reaction.
Exactly. I think another universal color that we all can understand is yellow as sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
Most everyone, anywhere, if you have them look at a Pantone yellow chip, and they will say it's warm. Because it's sunlight, it immediately elicits that kind of warmth. So we can wrap our heads around that. Again, from the world around us, we take these cues, we've learned them from the time we were small children.
Leatrice Eisman in studio tonight. She's the executive director of the Pantone Color Institute. She's also the author of her latest, The Complete Color Harmony Pantone Edition, out now. And she was just in town for the International Home and Houseware Show, which came through Chicago, an annual convention that brings in over 60,000 people from 100 different countries. Big deal at the McCormick Place. All right, we'll take a break real quick. We'll get an update on tonight's news, and we'll come back with Leatrice Eisman here talking color on The Download at the Big Table. So stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest in studio, Leatrice Eisman. She's the executive director of the Pantone Color Institute, the worldwide leader in studying color and setting trends for the future. This year, the color 2018 is ultraviolet. We're talking about the Pantone Color Institute. We're talking about the Complete Color Harmony, the Pantone Edition, which is Leatrice Eisman's latest book. And she was just in town doing the keynote at the International Home and Houseware Show at McCormick Place. On trend, we got to talk about this, because I find it very interesting that trends are the lifeblood of design. We've got to be on trend. But then we honor the people who maybe are the rebels, who aren't on trend. There's so much that goes into what it means to be a trend. I was trying to wrap my head around it all day today. How do you feel about setting the trend? If ultraviolet's going to be the trend and we're going to see it in stores all throughout 2018, is there room for anything else?
Oh, absolutely. There's room for more color than ultraviolet. What we're trying to do, again, is to start a conversation about color. Even though someone may say to me, you know, ultraviolet, that's not my favorite color. Purple has never been a favorite. That enables me to engage them in a conversation about that purple. Mm-hmm. Why is it not their favorite color? You know, trauma was attached to that purple? And we do not force feed trends to people and say, you know, whatever you're using is so yesterday. At Pantone Color Institute, that's not our style. Our style is to engage you as an individual and engage the marketplace as an individual. Use that purple with other colors. Try to get mood across with it. For example, in my book, in The Complete Color Harmony, we have 30 different moods that are involved. So you could take the same shade of ultraviolet or something very close to it, and you could create a palette and you call it transcendent. And it is somehow very ethereal shades of purple and other grays and blues that go along with it. That's creating a very calming mood, very different than putting another purple into a mood that we call piquant, which is another mood that comes out of the book, that kind of piquant mood.
Yeah, right.
That's about salsa. That's about excitement. That's about good food and dancing. So you mix it with the reds and the oranges and the yellows. What we're aiming to do as well is to help educate people, to get them to play with color more, have more fun with it. When we decorate the home around us where we live, it's really, really important to be mindful of what color says to you and how you want to feel in that environment every day. So the last thing we want to do at Pantone Color Institute is issue edicts about color.
It's tremendous, the association, the personal association of color. And it is a judgment, and it is, in a way, a personal choice. The age-old question that we ask kids when they, the first question that they can comprehend is, what's your favorite color? It's surprising to me because there really has to be a part of your world, which is so specific when it comes to trends design and even the science behind it, of open-mindedness. Because some people right away are saying, I don't like red, but I like blue. Or I like purple, I don't like yellow. And then they will have a, they just made a personal choice at some point, maybe when they were 5 years old. And so how do you get past, how do you convince people to think of all color the same way or to keep an open mind to the palette that's in front of them?
Well, that's an interesting point because I've worked with many companies. And at Pantone, we do consulting as well for big companies, small companies. And I think one of the biggest challenges is to walk into a meeting and the CEO is there or maybe a top manager and you show him what you think would be perfectly appropriate colors for his widget that he's developing and you give him the rationale and he says, it can't be green. Why can't it be green? I hate green. There you are. Now, here's a man that's going to put millions of dollars into a product, put it out on the marketplace, but it's not going to be green because he hates green. This is the what we have to get over.
Right.
And you don't say it to him in that way. He is a CEO, after all. You need to get over it, but you're thinking it. But you kind of suggest to them. But let's look at it from a more pragmatic standpoint. Who is your target audience? Who is it you're trying to reach? What age group? What's the price point? Let's think of all of these other aspects of color and what it can mean in the marketplace for your goods. So we have to find that way of getting over his own personal response to the color. Interestingly, I do classes on color, and one of the first things I ask people to do, and in several of my books I've done this, I've asked them to take a quiz. It's a color word association quiz, and to write down the first word that pops into their mind when they look at a color. That gives you so much insight.
Interesting.
I can't be with everybody who reads the book. Obviously,
right, right.
I can't talk to them all. But what I try to tell them is stop and think about what that response was.
Yeah.
Is it something that happened when you were 6 years old? Is it relevant in your world today? Does it still have meaning? Why is it still there in the back of your mind?
Is it permanent or can it be temporary? Can you move on from your feelings about
blue or red? And it's fascinating stuff.
Yeah,
because
it really
when you
is.
Have a conversation with people, you find out the most interesting things about them, but then you have to point out to them, the color is rarely used by itself. You use it with other colors. I'm not suggesting you use it just because it's a trend, but I'm asking you to open your mind and your heart and your creative sensibilities to more color in your life.
I always think about, you'll hear laymen who might be, myself included, who might be shopping on Michigan Avenue or maybe watching New York Fashion Week coverage or big shows in Milan or other places, and you say that, oh, who's going to wear that? Someone walking down the runway. And, oh, that's all these crazy designers. And you don't really think about what you're talking about, this idea of color and what's on point and what's on trend. And it may not be the outfit that's on the model that's walking down the runway. That's the most important thing about that show. It's about how they're using color. It's about how they're, as you said, mixing color and putting this stuff together. That can inform even other places, like at the houseware show, plates, design, you know, dinnerware, appliances, everything in between. So there is a connection to what we see on the screen when we see the top models walking up and down the runway to our daily lives.
Absolutely. And that's a very good point. I mean, you could walk down Michigan Avenue and see some wonderful window and you see a particular line or design that you like that it attracts you. You don't particularly like the color so much, but there's something about it that pulls you in. You go in, you have a conversation, you try it on, and I call it the lost leader syndrome or walking into a car showroom. You know, you read that bright red is going to be the color of next spring, a very, very bright red, and you think, oh, I'm ready to buy a new car. Maybe I need to finally, you know, break down and buy a red car. You look on the website or you go into the showroom, you look at the red car and you say, you know, that's still too much for me, but I do like the car. Maybe I need to look around. You may not leave with a red car. You haven't signed on the dotted line. You may not order that. You'll order the pewter or the black or whatever. The point is, it's the color that helped to...
Start the conversation.
Really exactly.
I think of generations of color, and I think of crayons. And I think early on there were 8 crayons. And then at some point, Crayola or whoever the companies were said, no, now there's 40. Now there's 200. Now there's 600. Have we discovered every color that's out there?
Oh, no. There are so many colors yet to be discovered. I mean, there's just so much that right now is available to the human eye. But we don't know, again, what science and technology is going to evoke in the years to come. Maybe the ability that takes us beyond where we are now to see yet more colors in the spectrum than we ever thought were possible.
That's amazing. And you know, we learn so much, and obviously we could talk all night about this, and we get into the philosophy of what color means. We learned so much from the internet explosion a couple years back about whether the dress was gold or whether the dress was blue. And we see this once in a while and people really getting into the purple that you're wearing right now, how you see that purple and how I see it, and how we all have a different understanding of what color means to us or what it even looks like. How at the Pantone Color Institute, how do you deal with that? The fact that you can't get in everybody's head. So what I see right now might be different than what you see. And how do you reconcile that?
Well, that's a very well taken point. But there is also the generality that is the overarching subject too. And when I mentioned nature as the overarching feeling, I mentioned yellow, the sunlight. Now, not everybody's going to love yellow. Not everybody's going to wear yellow. But the point is, we can all go back to something that is some commonality of feeling, and you can do some variation around that color. And even though each person may view the color differently, if you've made a suggestion about the color, you know, let's have a look at that yellow. Let's try it with the gray, as I already mentioned. Then you get the thought processes beyond just a purely personal reaction to the color. And by the way, one thing I want to make very clear, when I talk about color, I'm not just talking about bright, primary, explosive, you know, knock your socks off kind of color. There are nuances of color. There's soft tones. There's people that are very, you know, very much relate to neutral tones as opposed to bright colors. But even that, from a psychological perspective, has some meaning. When people say to me, well, you know, black isn't a color. But black still has a psychological basis. It still says certain things.
Yeah, right.
It's still elegant. It is still sophisticated. In some cultures, it's still associated with grief and mourning, although today it's really changed somewhat to be much more sophisticated connotation of black. So times can change a perspective of what color is, too. No question of that.
I guess I only have one question left, and what's your favorite color?
Well, that's like asking a mother who her favorite child is. Do you know, I kid about it, but truly, I do love the purple that I have on, because purple is the color of creativity. I love the complexity of it. But at the same time, what the challenge for me really is, and the fun is, especially if I'm working with a client, what do we combine it with?
Yeah.
What other colors do we put with it? That's the part of it that really fascinates me.
Well, I can't wait to buy a bunch of ultraviolet polos this summer for the beach, right?
Good.
Leatrice Eisman is the executive director of the Pantone Color Institute. Her new book, The Complete Color Harmony, Pantone Edition, is out now. She was just in town as a keynote for the International Home and Houseware Show that just came through Chicago at McCormick Place. Miss Eisman, it was a pleasure to have you here. Thanks so much for being my guest at the big table.
Thank you.